They didn't even have time to turn before Karras and his squad cut them down, bolts and beams ripping into them, turning the corridor outside the door into an azure bloodbath. "Tell an alpha to Archangel, respond!" No, the Vox was still out. Stepping over smoking bodies, Karras ripped out the power feed to the cutting laser and batted the machine aside. He removed his helm, raised a hand, spread his fingers, and placed his palm on the surface. The field suppressing his gifts was as powerful as ever, but Copley was just on the other side, maybe a dozen meters away. If he pushed hard enough, if he really tried, there was a chance, slim perhaps, that he might manage to reach her. Closing his eyes, he called his power forth from deep down inside his mind. He tried to push his consciousness out beyond the confines of his physical body. He couldn't. The suppression field was too strong. He focused harder, drawing forth more power from the warp. As it rose up from within, white witchfire began to manifest, licking his armor and flickering around his smooth, chalk-white skull. The troopers beside him retreated a little and turned to cover the corridor behind. Karras pushed harder. With effort and unusual slowness, his astral self at last emerged from his body and phased through the door. On the other side, the souls of Copley and her people shone brightly, drawing him forward. Copley's soul was by far the brightest, so easy to distinguish. Focusing hard, he pressed towards it. When he was right in front of her, he reached into her light. It was turbulent in there. She was in control, but tense. Her mind was racing, processing visual data from the security feeds all across the base. "Major!" Immediately he sensed her attention shift. "Copley," he said, "open the door. It is Karras." He felt her confusion. Had she just heard a voice? Was it her imagination? She tried to message him over the Vox. When that failed, she pulled up a holo display from one of the feeds outside the control room. She saw the corridor, saw the Death Spectre and his team there. Karras felt her relief and stopped resisting the suppression field. He snapped back into himself, and the eerie white light around him guttered and vanished. A moment later, the heavy doors to the command center began to split. "Inside!" Karras ordered his team. "You'll cover the corridor from there." He strode past them to greet Archangel face to face. The visual feeds told a story of ordered chaos. Standing at Copley's side, dwarfing her utterly, Karras watched on banks of Tau monitors as members of Talon Squad and Task Force Arcturus exchanged fire with a dwindling alien force that still greatly outnumbered them. Had it not been for the air support of the Storm Ravens, the sheer deadly might of Chiron holding the central courtyard, and Omni's destruction of the Tau armor, things would have been very different out there. The situation was still highly fluid. Nothing was certain. The balance could tip either way at any moment. And still no sign of Epsilon. Chiron was being hunted by the XV-8s. The Storm Ravens had yet to get Prophet the kill angle he needed. Using the Tau's own barricades against them, Voss and his team were doing their best to support the Dreadnought, keeping the Tau infantry from deploying anything heavy enough to complicate matters. But there was little room to maneuver, and time was against them. Copley expressed deep concern. "They will overcome," Karras said. "We must trust to that, and focus on finding Epsilon." The woman pointed to a holo monitor on the right. "That is the entryway to a dedicated Vata that goes down to the basement levels. There is no other access. None of the feeds show us what's down there. Whatever it is, Tau Command did not want or need the personnel at these stations to see it."
"I need to get down there now," said Karras. He glanced at the other monitors. Watcher and Ghost had taken control of the north and south internment blocks. They had yet to release the inmates, but each level was littered with the bodies of blue-skinned guards. "Without the Vox Link," he said, "I can't order them to release the prisoners. It would aid us greatly to have the Tau suddenly overwhelmed by desperate escapees." I can't say why Vox isn't working in this particular block. I've had Morant going through their systems. There's nothing like that. It must be something in the basement.
Whatever is suppressing my gift is there also. I was able to reach you through the door only through proximity and great effort.
Both of your brothers are occupying cell block control rooms. I could try the facility's hardline comms, send a visual over to the monitors in those rooms. If they're watching, they'll get it.
Do that, Karras said. Get them to release every last prisoner in those blocks. We'll flood the tower in the courtyard with too many targets. Prophet and Chiron will take down the XV-8s, but I need to get below. And you need to sabotage this place and get your team outside. Help hold the exfil point. I need your best lockbreaker with me, and your second best as insurance.
Morant is your man. I'll send him with you. Carland from your own fire team would be second choice. It's a distant second, so don't lose Morant.
I don't intend to. Keep those Vaters running, but sabotage the rest of their systems. Blow this room if you have to, but those Vaters must stay operational.
He turned and left her at the displays, descended to the lower level of the command room, and strode powerfully towards the door. Copley watched him, finding herself abruptly and powerfully conflicted. Only now did she realize that she had automatically and completely deferred to him. It was so hard not to. His very presence practically demanded it. Her pride won out. She called down to him, her voice sharp with anger-edged authority.
You're forgetting who gives the damned orders around here, Death Watch.
Kara stopped and turned to stare up at her from the level below. He removed his helm so he could look her in the eye. As she held that blood-red gaze, she felt a wave of self-doubt wash over her.
Look at him.
Splashed in the blood of aliens, his armored bulk carved with shells, he looked like a mythical battle god made real. And she felt suddenly and totally inadequate before him. She quietly cursed. Had pride just made a fool of her? Karras, after a long second, simply grinned up at her.
My apologies, Major. With your permission.
Copley swallowed and threw him a nod.
Get to it, Talon. We're counting on you.
Karras gave a shallow bow, replaced his helm and strode out the door. Copley shouted for Morant and Carland to follow him, and the two men raced off after the Space Marine. He was moving fast. They had to sprint to catch up. Copley then called out for the attention of everyone left in the control center.
Listen up, you meatheads. We're going to sab every system and circuit in this place, with the exception of the Vaters. Then we get out of here. Rendezvous with a dreadnought and the fire team in the central courtyard, and hold the exfil point until extraction. Is that clear?
Yes, ma'am, they called back.
Good. We've got 3 minutes. Let's do some damage.
Chapter 30. Karras skidded to a halt and thrust up one gauntleted fist.
Hold,
he barked. Morant and Carland slid to a stop beside him. Karras ushered them back against the wall. The next stretch of corridor was the last between him and the Vaiter, but the Tau were present in force. A squad of 20, entrenched behind portable barricades, guarded the only door. 3 heavy weapons had been mounted. Between them they covered the north corridor down which Karras would have to come, and each of the side corridors, east and west. The firepower he was facing here was formidable. Had it not been for the heavy weapons, he knew he could have walked straight in among them. Without full access to his gift, which might shield him or massively magnify his speed and Space Marine reflexes, he and the Elysians might well be cut to bloody pieces.
"No way around them, my lord?" asked Carland.
He was the younger of the two Elysians by a decade, but his eyes already had the coldness of the seasoned Special Ops veteran. Karras pulled a Death Watch-issue Thundershock EMP grenade from a bandolier around his armor and chambered it in the grenade launcher under the barrel of his bolter.
Why go around when we can go through? I'm going to hit them dead center and disrupt their hardware.
The moment it goes down, give them everything you've got. but stay behind me. Do not try to rush ahead.
Understood, said Morant.
Carland nodded. Ready yourselves, said Karras. When this round detonates, there may be interference with our own equipment. Nothing serious at this range, but be prepared. With that, he leaned around the corner and fired. Pulse round smacked into the wall in front of him. There was a thunk, followed by a loud zap.
Now!
Shouted Karras. He burst from the corner and began systematically gunning down every target he laid eyes on. The Elysians followed, one to each side of him, lasguns blazing death. Alien voices cried out in anguish. The Tau had looked well prepared, but they were too dependent on their technology. As soon as the thundershock disrupted their optics, they started desperately trying to throw off their battle helms. Some had been bareheaded before it detonated. These few were still stunned by the noise and light of the detonation, but they quickly rallied and started to return fire, filling the corridor with crackling blue plasma and beams of lethal energy. They focused fire on Karras, desperate to stop him as he tore towards them, but his armor could soak up more small arms fire than this before systems and integrity started to suffer. It was the heavy weapons that posed the real threat. Karras prioritized the killing of their gunners. Each fell with a wet blue crater where his face had been. Three bolt rounds, three grisly kills. The other fire warriors ducked behind the barricades, safely out of the storm, if only for a moment. Karras was about to order the Elysians to throw frags, when suddenly, from the west corridor, he saw a grenade arc smoothly over the barricades and land right in among the foe. It detonated sharply, slaughtering those in cover. Of the 10 remaining Tau, 7 were instantly killed. The other 3 were injured badly. Karras had a feeling he already knew who would toss that frag. He was right. Routh was a blur of black and silver as he came into view, leaping over the barricade to kill the rest of the Tau with his combat knife. Karras signaled to the Elysians to follow as he walked forward to meet his squad brother, Bolter now lowered at his side.
You're supposed to be holding the north cell block, Watcher.
Routh looked up from wiping his knife on the beige combat uniform of his last alien victim, sheathed the blade at his lower back, and said,
The stormtroopers can manage now. I'm going down there with you.
He thrust his chin in the direction of the Veta doors.
You don't know what you're walking into.
Neither do you, replied Karras.
So, we go together, said Routh.
As was his way, he didn't seem to be giving Karras much choice, despite the matter of rank. Karras eyed him a moment, then said,
Great is the worth of he who would walk beside you into that darkness where no man has stepped before. Ser Vesta's white road to Stramos, 32nd millennium.
Karras grinned.
I can't seem to get away from you. Perhaps I should feel blessed. No, said Routh. You should not.
Karras ordered Morant forward to the door panel.
How long?
He asked, as the Elysian pulled a hacking panel and cables from a pouch on his webbing. Morant was kneeling, already at work when he answered.
Solid encryption, 3 levels. Estimating full Veta control in 4 to 6 minutes, my lord.
The fresh sound of boots on the corridor floor reached Karras's and Routh's enhanced ears.
Scholar, we've got incoming, a lot of them.
Carland, said Karras. Get into cover with a fire arc on the north corridor. Routh, cover the west. I've got the east. Carland nodded.
My lord's command.
All 3 got themselves into position. If they cluster, said Karras, use frags. The first of the Tau squads to arrive began firing from the cover of the corner, around which Karras and his Elysians had only just come. Pulse rounds smacked and fizzed on the outward face of the barricade. Karras checked his current mag, cocked his bolter, and said to Morant,
Make it 3 minutes, soldier. They're about to throw a lot of pressure our way.
With that, he raised himself above the lip of the barricade and took aim. Chapter 31 Guns blazing, the storm ravens strafed the walls and rooftops mercilessly. Tau bodies were ripped apart by the dozen, splashing the walkways blue. Others were punched over the edge by rounds that struck them center mass. They tumbled screaming to the unforgiving ground below. As the gunships systematically cleared the walls and towers, missiles streaked into the air, leaping up on trails of fire and smoke to try and strike them down. Even so, as the walls and towers were being purged, the lock-on alarms in the cockpit of each Storm Raven began to blare less and less frequently. Each time the warning runes lit, the pilots would hit a countermeasures rune, sending out a cloud of flares and irradiated chaff. Guidance systems became confused. Missiles detonated harmlessly in mid-air. Each time they did, however, the pilots threw increasingly anxious glances at their readouts. All too soon, the stock of countermeasures would be gone, and there would be no choice left but to outfly the missiles. At that point, their skills would be measured against their lives. It was not a competition any pilot won for long.
"It's working," Salarian told Flight Lieutenant Graka. "Keep the pressure on them. The heights are almost clear."
The Storm Ravens hadn't been able to risk a hover since the moment they had dropped the assault teams. Now, with the Tau threat all but cleared from the walls, it was time for Salarian to take his shot. Leaning out of the right side hatch, he ordered the pilot to circle while he looked for a kill angle on one of the XV-8s. Down on the ground, in positions of barely adequate cover between the barracks, hangars, and prison blocks, he could see Voss and Chiron more or less pinned down, doing their best to hold fast with the support of Coplis soldiers. A couple of bodies in black assault gear lay beside them in growing pools of red. Some of the Arcturus operators had already paid the ultimate price in their duty to the Golden Throne. One of the XV-8s emerged from behind the corner of a barracks building and fired searing blue bursts at Talons 4 and 6. Chiron, being the bigger and wielding the most firepower, was the obvious target. He shuddered and staggered backwards as the beam struck his dense armored chassis. Two glowing craters the size of melons marked his black body now, smoke drifting into the air from each. The dreadnought shook it off and returned fire. But the XV-8 had used its jets to dash at blistering speed to fresh cover. The shells from Chiron's assault cannon tore the wall of the barracks to pieces, revealing the plasteel supports beneath the rockcrete. But the XV-8s were just too fast for the Lamenta to get a proper bead when cover was so plentiful. No kill angle on that one, not from here.
"Where's the other?" Salarian wondered.
Then, as Reaper 2 swung around on the western edge of the battle, with the sky's first hints of dawn on the far side, he saw movement between the north block and the central tower. It was fast and large. It had to be the other battlesuit. He barked orders to the pilot, and the Storm Raven swooped in for yet another kill. Sifa Zeed's lip was pulled back over his teeth as he looked at the monitors in the control room of the south cell block. The rest of Talon was deep in combat, already reveling in his beloved dance of death. And where the hell was he? Stuck in a cell block control room, watching it unfold on a bunch of damned hollow screens.
"Enough!"
"My lord?"
asked Corporal Gaman, the most senior of the troopers Copley had assigned to him as support.
"I said it's enough, by terror!"
Zeed swung to face him, his flawless white face creased with cold fury.
"I can't languish here, watching it all from a distance."
Gaman, for all his years as a hardened Xenos killer, could only look back into those cold black eyes for a moment. He broke his gaze away to look at the firefight on the monitors.
"My lord should be out there," he said, "where the fighting is. You were born for that, my lord. Go take the Emperor's wrath to them. We..."
he gestured to the other Elysians in the room.
"We'll hold the block until the Major orders us out."
Zeed was already on his way to the door when he heard Gaman add one more thing.
"We'll be watching on the monitors, my lord, and if we might ask a favor..."
"Ask it,"
said Zeed. Gaman grinned.
"Make it worth watching."
Zeed grinned back, punched the command glyph for the control room doors, and broke into a run. His blood was already up at the thought of throwing himself into battle. His secondary heart began to pump. Combat chemicals flooded his system, sharpening his senses. He moved through the cell block like a freight train, his pauldron smashing rockcrete from the walls as he rounded tight corners. Soon, all that separated him from the battle outside was a set of metal doors at the end of the final corridor. As he thundered towards them, he felt elation and excitement flowing through him. He flexed his fists eagerly. He was just meters from the doors when they exploded inwards, a great wash of fire and heat and deadly debris. The blast knocked him from his feet.
Chapter 32. The corridors were filled with a smoky haze, and the sharp smells of ionized air and Tau blood.
"Garland," moaned Morant.
The sergeant knelt by the motionless body of his fellow operator, cradling his head. No response. Garland was already gone. Deep, cauterized holes bored through his armor and the flesh and bones of his chest. Smoke still wisped upwards from them. The fighting had been fierce. The Tau desperate to prevent Karras, Routh, and the Arcturus troopers from getting below. They had thrown a wall of blistering fire at the Imperials behind the barricade. When that hadn't worked, they tossed smoke and tried to rush them, foolish and desperate. Karras looked down at Morant, holding his dead comrade. He was conditioned to be cold in battle, but he knew what Morant was feeling. Even Space Marines knew grief. The Death Spectres had faced long odds and come through many, many times, but the price had often been painfully high. He could see colors of deep sorrow and loss, tinged with flickers of survivor guilt, coruscating around Morant's kneeling form. He placed a heavy, gauntleted hand on the Elysian's shoulder.
"He fought with honor. His place is assured. Do not grudge him a worthy death, just because you must go on without him. This was his time."
Morant took a deep, ragged breath and sighed.
"He was young. Fruit falls when ripe, but a man may die on any day," stated Routh.
Karras recognized it. The fourth book of Thule by Duris Trant. Trant had been eaten alive by razor-mouth squid on Ashika, while swimming in a lake. There had never been a fifth book. Behind Karras, the hacking module Morant had set up chimed. The Vata doors gave a mechanical hiss and slid back into their housing. Karras turned to see the open Vata cage waiting for them. At the same moment, he noted the hurried approach of more booted feet closing quickly on their position. "Take his tags, Morant," he told the grieving soldier. "It's time to go." Routh strode into the Vata, turned and raised his weapon to cover the others. He too had heard the rush of feet on the corridor floor. Morant grabbed the tags and tugged them from Carlin's neck.
"See you when it's my time, Car."
He stood, bowed his head briefly, and made the sign of the Aquila. Just as he was turning to the Vata, beams of blinding Tau fire scored the air around him. Rounds smacked into the walls on either side of the Vata doors. One found its mark on Morant's left arm, burning away a bite-sized channel of flesh. The Elysian cried out and dropped into a crouch, nerves singing with agony. From the cover of the Vata doors, Routh leaned out and sent bursts back at the Tau.
"Scholar!"
he snapped. Karras was already moving. He grabbed Morant by the combat webbing on his back and tossed him into the Vata. Morant hit the far wall with a moan and dropped to the floor. The Tau began blasting away in earnest, rounds peppering the walls in their hundreds. Routh hit a rune on the panel inside the Vata and the doors began hissing shut. As they did, Karras threw out a hand to stop them. Soaking up several shots on his arm and pauldron, he reached round to the outside of the Vata and grabbed Morant's hacking module. Then he ducked back inside and let the doors resume closing. Through the narrowing gap, glowing pulse rounds and burning beams scored the metal of the Vata cage's back wall, but the Tau had missed their chance. Whatever lay below, whatever the Tau were hiding here, Karras was about to see with his own eyes. Chapter 33. Zeed shoved a block of rubble from his breastplate with a grunt and pushed himself to his feet. Dust from the destruction of the cell block doors filled the air. The impact had killed the lighting in the corridor. Daylight was dawning outside, but its illumination hadn't reached the canyon floor on which the tower sat. Space Marine eyes needed only a tiny amount of light, of course, to see perfectly well. Ahead of him, he made out a hulking armored form on its back. It was half blocking his route out. He slung his tactical bolter over his shoulder and slid his fists into the housing of the lightning claws maglocked to each of his thighs. His weapons of choice. Nothing else compared. No high ever came close to the battle rush of hand-to-hand combat. He often entered a half-mindless peak state in which his whole body was given over to the ultimate expression of the life-and-death struggle between mortal foes. He was different from the others. Duty and honor were important, yes, but it was the battle high that gave his life meaning. He could never get enough. With the claws locked into place, he sent a thought impulse through his armor's neural connection. A lethal power field activated just millimeters from the metal surface of each claw, a deadly invisible addition that made a mockery of most armor, even that of tanks. This done, he moved forward to investigate. He found himself standing over a Tau battlesuit, with two perfect holes punched in it, each about the size and shape of an armor-piercing bolter round. He opened a vox channel, noting how weak and filled with static it was. Undaunted, he said, "I'm down here admiring your handiwork, Prophet. Nice of you to open the door for me."
"I don't know what you're talking about, Raven Guard," Solarian snapped back.
"Don't bother me while I'm busy." One of the Ultramarine's rounds had struck the XV-8's apparent head, dead center. What looked like a head, of course, was actually part of the suit's sensor array and control systems housing. Essentially, knocking it out had removed the suit's advanced sensory feed, fire control systems, even some of its AI-assisted mobility systems. But that wasn't how one killed an XV-8. That was how you winged it. The second shot had been the kill shot. The round had lanced straight through the thickest armor plating on the whole suit. If Zeed were to cut that plate off right now, he'd find that the round had obliterated the skull of the pilot inside. The cramped cockpit of the suit was awash with alien blood and bone fragments.
"Hell of a shot anyway, you sour-faced son of a squig," Zeed muttered to himself, stepping over the outstretched right arm of the dead machine. Now he was outside. The sky was a pale violet, but the facility was still deep in shadow, lit only in flickers and flares by the battle that raged within its walls. Zeed wished he had a jump pack. Higher mobility would mean a higher kill count. Alas, he was confined to the ground this time.
"Never mind," he told himself. "Still some fun to be had."
All that gunfire meant it wasn't too late. Over the vox, he called out, "Hey, Tree Stump, what's your count so far?"
48, not counting vehicles," replied Voss.
He paused for a moment, then added,
49. Yours?"
Zeed had slain 28 Tau soldiers while storming the prison block and taking the control room.
"You're way behind," laughed Voss. "Better give it up this time."
Zeed was already running towards the sound of the nearest Tau squad. With his armor's sound damping and photoreactive camouflage cells, the Tau wouldn't know he was among them until it was too late. They would be focusing all their fire towards Voss, Chiron, and the Arcturus troopers. He would claim many Xenos lives before the order came to exfiltrate. Such a pity the Tau were poor prey without their battle suits. They were smart and strategic, and their technology and tactics were solid at long range, but to Zeed they didn't provide enough sport at close quarters. He was thinking this when a massive object struck the dirt right in front of him. A few more meters, and he would have been crushed. He looked up and found himself staring into the scanner lenses of an armored figure 3 full meters taller than himself, all heavy plate and oversized weapons. It was mostly shadow, but red lights on its head and torso winked through the clouds of dust. This close, he could hear the humming of its powerful generator, could feel it vibrating his armor. Despite Zeed's stealth systems being fully activated, the giant angular form immediately focused on him, trying to bring its weapons to bear. Its advanced sensory suite had picked him up easily at such close range. To Zeed, it was as if the universe had just granted him a wish. Here was the fight he wanted. Here was a proper challenge where he'd expected none. He dropped into combat stance, arms splayed, lightning claws out to either side, blades angled, edge forward at his foe. "My lucky day," he said with a laugh. "And you're last. Don't disappoint me, Blueskin." Violence exploded. Machine strength and AI-boosted reflexes clashed with flawless combat genetics. Centuries of training and a love of battle that bordered on madness.
"I am an angel of death," thought Zeed, as he slipped
aside a lethal diagonal swipe and slashed his claws across the battlesuit's left knee, severing cables and hydraulics. Coolant and lubricant splashed his black cuirass.
"And I will never be beaten at close range. Never!"
Chapter 34. Karras and Routh emerged from the Vata cautiously, weapons raised. It was quiet. Too quiet.
"This is wrong, scholar," breathed Routh. "No resistance. They must know we're here. Those above would have called it in."
Karras had other things on his mind. The force which had been suppressing his gift had been getting progressively stronger the closer he came to this place. Here, he felt the flow of energy from the immaterium cut off from him utterly.
"Karras!"
growled Routh impatiently. Karras raised a hand.
"Give me a damned moment, brother!"
Routh guessed the Death Spectre was working one of his fell magics, sending some astral projection of his mind along the corridors ahead, perhaps, and kept his silence. Morant hung back in the Vata cage, adjusting the field dressing Routh had helped him apply to his wounded left arm. His lasgun was slung over one shoulder. His hacking module was back in its pouch on his webbing. He couldn't wield the lasgun anymore, but he had a hotshot las pistol holstered at his right hip and a combat knife with a monomolecular blade that could cut through standard Tau infantry armor with ease. If there was fighting to be done down here, pistol and blade would have to suffice. He was no space marine, but he was still in the fight. He would do what he could to support the dark giants in front of him. Karras had finished processing some troubling thoughts. He'd come to his conclusion.
"They're pulling out. That's why there's no force to meet us. Whatever is down here, they're getting ready to leave with it."
He turned to Routh.
"We don't have much time, Watcher. We have to get to Epsilon."
The corridor stretched out in two directions, north and south, both curving round to the east, cutting off the view ahead at about 20 meters.
"Which way?"
demanded the exorcist. Without his gift, Karras had no way of knowing. He had a hunch that the corridors would eventually merge, forming a complete circle. If he was right, it didn't matter which direction they chose. If he was wrong, they'd lose precious, maybe even critical, time.
"Left!"
The two space marines broke into a jog. Morant followed, running hard to keep up. Karras called back to him.
"Try to stay with us, soldier! We cannot afford to slow for you. If you fall behind, keep running. I believe we will have need of your skills again very soon."
Morant pushed thoughts of his wound aside, though every step sent fresh waves of pain surging through him.
"I will not falter. I will not fail."
He put on all the speed he could manage. Even so, the two giants were quickly pulling away. Thick, windowless doors marked with Tau glyphs whipped past them. Karras and Routh had mastered the Tau script. They read each door as they ran. Storage, maintenance, and then a series of cells, the purpose of which could only be guessed at. Suddenly, Karras halted. Routh ran on a few steps, then stopped and turned.
"What is it, scholar?"
"I don't know," murmured Karras. "Something..."
He reached out with a gauntleted hand, pressing it against the door in front of him.
"Nothing. The psychic suppression is too complete. So why did I stop?"
Morant caught up to them, a light sweat on his brow.
"I cannot say why, brother," Karras told Routh. "But we have to check this room."
Routh shrugged. Karras's power was a dark thing, a thing not to be trusted, but its value could not be denied. He had no idea that the gift in question was currently not a factor.
"Morant," said Karras.
The trooper moved to the access panel, connected his module, and began to work. On the tiny screen, thousands of Tau glyphs scrolled by at an almost unreadable speed. Suddenly, the flow stopped. Morant had found what he was looking for. He reached for the keypad on the access panel and tapped in a 7-glyph code. Seals disengaged within the door housing. Thick bolts slid aside. The door retracted upward into the frame. Routh looked at Karras expectantly. Karras nodded him through, then followed, bolter raised. They found themselves in an observation room. The left and right walls were transparent, made of a tough polymer that was the Tau equivalent of glass. What Karras saw in the chambers beyond made his breath catch in his chest. In the room on the right, hanging by their arms from ceramic restraints attached to the ceiling, were 5 figures of unmistakable size and musculature.
"Space Marines," snarled Karras.
"Epsilon's kill team," added Routh.
Karras moved closer to the window. He nodded.
"Saber Squad. But missing 3 members."
The Space Marines of Saber Squad were still wearing the black bodysuits that sat between skin and power armor. But of their armor itself, there was no sign. They were breathing, though each of their faces was masked with some kind of sensory deprivation helmet. None seemed injured.
"Another over here, my lords," said Morant.
There was no mistaking the heaviness in his tone.
"The Xenos bastards have made a real mess of him."
Routh crossed the room to stand by Morant. What he saw made him bare his teeth, and a dark anger filled his heart. He who was the least emotional of all Talon Squad.
"Vivisection," he breathed. "See those machines connected to the body? They dissected him alive, scholar."
Karras joined them at the window, and his heart, too, filled with righteous rage.
"How?" he muttered through gritted teeth. "What, in Terra's holy name, brought them to this?"
"The others are alive," said Routh. "But Karras, if Epsilon and the Tau are moving out as you say, we can't spare time for this."
"My lords," gasped Morant, "surely we..."
Routh whipped his head around to the trooper.
"Silence! This is a Space Marine matter."
"No time," said Karras. "You're right, Watcher, but we both know we cannot leave them. I will push on ahead with Morant. I charge you with releasing them and catching up to me."
Routh was quiet for a brief moment, just long enough to communicate his disapproval. But he knew the truth of what Karras had said. Whatever waited up ahead, neither would rest easy knowing they had left brothers imprisoned here.
"On your order then, Alpha," said Routh. "Now get out of here and let me work."
As Karras and Morant left, the Exorcist was thumbing plastic explosive charges into a breaching pattern on the thick window between himself and the 5 Space Marines on the other side. They were already running, their feet pounding the corridor, when they heard the crack of the explosion and the crash of the window breaking into a million pieces. But Karras couldn't think about that now. Up ahead, the corridor straightened for 50 meters and ended at a large door.
"So,"
thought Karras,
The corridors didn't join up after all. Let us hope I made the right choice.
The door was marked with Tau glyphs. Main operations, extreme caution beyond this point. Karras and Morant jogged to a halt in front of it. Karras gestured to the door.
You know what to do, soldier. Crack it. Fast.
Chapter 35. Main operations seemed as deserted as the rest of the basement level. Karras and Morant stepped into a hallway with another large security door at the far end. On either side, smaller doors led into surgeries and observation rooms. There were banks of Tau cogitators and monitors, workstations arranged in rows, but they were all dead. Here and there, a chair lay toppled. Sheaves of crystalline printouts covered in Tau glyphs lay scattered where they had fallen. The place had all the signs of a rushed evacuation.
When the Tau clear out, they clear out fast. Doesn't mean they won't be back, offered Morant.
Karras spoke without turning.
His eyes were on the far end of the hall. Get to work on that door.
Morant bowed and jogged over to it, steadfastly ignoring the pain of his wounded arm. Karras began investigating the side rooms. No Tau, no sign of Epsilon. And yet, he had a strong feeling, a feeling in his gut that she was here, that he hadn't come too late. The surgeries and observation rooms had been ransacked. There was nothing left to show what had been happening here. Still, there was a heavy feeling in Karras's gut, something familiar and foreboding. The faintest hint of a familiar scent hung in the air. For some reason, his mind called up memories of the mines under Chiaro's surface. Morant stood from his hacking module and disconnected it as the massive door slid upwards into the ceiling. A vast echoing space gaped beyond. He called out to Karras, and the Death Spectre strode over to join him. Together, they looked through the portal at the massive chamber beyond. It was cool in there, cool and damp and gloomy. The ceiling was high and hewn from solid rock. There had been a natural cavern here. The original Imperial inhabitants had exploited it to make this space. Thick pillars supported the roof every 10 meters or so. Blocky, human-made, none of the smoothness or roundness so beloved of the Tau. All along the walls stood monitoring stations and storage units. Lights shone from the fixtures halfway up the pillars, illuminating the floor but leaving the ceiling in shadow. That floor was a patchwork of metal and transparent polymer. Stretching out in a grid across the whole space were railing-lined walkways. Between these, sunk deep in the floor, were holding tanks of some kind. The ceiling of each tank was floor level. Were one to simply jump the railings, one might walk straight out across them. Karras walked to the nearest of the tanks and looked down into it. Empty. But the walls had been raked repeatedly by something sharp. He moved on along the central walkway, bolter raised and ready. He was deeply uneasy. Angry, too, that something was suppressing his gift when he needed it most. Just what the hell was all this? Morant fell in behind him, clutching his pistol tightly, eyes wide, alert to any movement. When they reached the next junction on the walkway, they both looked down into the second holding tank.
Throne and saints, whispered Morant.
Karras just glared down at what he saw, his lip twisted in a snarl. There below him, packed tight, were a dozen twisted forms of chitin and claw.
Tyranids, said Morant.
Tau gene stealer hybrids, said Karras.
They were unmistakable. Where human hybrids still bore a nose, or at least nostrils, these creatures bore the olfactory facial slit of the Tau. But no, it was more than just that. Their lineage was just as clear in their lipless mouths, their flatter facial bone structure, their three-fingered hands. Karras's mind was on overdrive. What were the Tau doing with a tank full of abominations? What did Epsilon have to do with this? Now he knew why his mind kept bringing him back to Chiaro, to Operation Night Harvest. This is no coincidence. One of the hybrids glanced up and saw him. It tossed back its head and loosed a long, throaty howl. The others looked up. When they saw the soldier and the space marine staring down at them, they went into a frenzy, clambering over each other to get closer and try to fulfill their genetic imperative to kill and consume for the proliferation of their foul species. A few leapt from the backs of others and slashed at the polymer ceiling with curving black claws, leaving white scratches, but they couldn't break through. The Tau weren't sloppy.
What were they doing with them?
Morant wondered aloud. For Karras, things started clicking into place.
A Geller field. That's why my power is being suppressed. To create hybrids, they'd need pure strange stealers. And the Tau would have to prevent those stealers from guiding the hive mind here. Otherwise, the whole planet...
And if that were true, it was highly likely that Epsilon herself had provided the Geller field generator. He spun on Morant.
Get back to the upper levels. Get word to Copley. She has to pull everyone out. Now! Get everyone on the Storm Ravens and get them out of here!
M'lord?
Karras pointed at the monsters in the tank. Then he ordered Morant to follow him and marched to the next. There, he found what he knew he would. Pure strain gene stealers. They stood at rest, swaying slightly, armored backs glistening in the light from the lamps on the pillars. Karras growled. He had seen enough of them back on Chiaro. The bony, almost fleshless heads, the twisted, razor-lined mouths, the four lethal black-taloned arms.
Why?
Gasped Morant. Epsilon, said Karras. He was starting to see. Epsilon must have brought some project to the Tau here. They wouldn't know to use a Geller field to isolate their specimens otherwise. I'll wager it was she who made this possible.
Why would an Ordo member work with the Tau on something like this?
I'll find that out when I ask her, said Karras.
No, Death Spectre,
rumbled a voice like distant thunder.
You won't.
A bulky black figure emerged from behind one of the central pillars up ahead. Red visor lenses glowed. Light shimmered on silver and black ceramite. A bolter was raised, aimed straight at Karras.
Get behind me now, Karras muttered to Morant. And be ready to run for the door the moment I say go. Don't question me. Get everyone off sight as fast as you can. This place will be a smoking crater very soon.
What about you, my lord?
Karras didn't answer. The figure in front of him had his full attention. Now another, similarly clad in black power armor, stepped out of cover. The first spoke again, his voice deep, even for a space marine.
We would have you turn back, Lyandro Karras. We would not see Adeptus Astartes' blood spilled. Leave with haste, and put as much distance between yourself and this facility. As you can.
You know my name? Said Karras.
It wasn't a question.
And I know yours, Cor Cabanon of the Iron Hands. And yours, Lucianus of the Scythes of the Emperor.
What I do not know is why you betrayed the rest of your kill team into Xenos' hands and are helping Epsilon betray the Ordo and the Imperium.
Cabanon shook his helmed head.
You cannot begin to comprehend what is at stake. This game is too big for you, Death Spectre. Turn around and leave it to those better informed. For your own sake and the sake of your brothers.
I have orders, Karras shot back. A duty!
We are here to retrieve Epsilon. Join us in getting her back into Ordo hands or face judgment as traitors of the Imperium.
He talks of duty, said Lucianus, his voice higher and sharper than his counterparts.
Brother, few know the meaning of duty as we do. Sacrifice, honor. Things are not as you believe.
Do not seek to judge. Go back the way you came.
The door at the very far end of the chamber slid open, and a slender feminine figure, all in black like her bodyguards, stalked towards them. When she was level with Cabanon, she stopped and looked Karras over. He found himself staring into the pale golden eyes of a beautiful woman, her skin almost as white as his own, her hair so black it seemed to drink the light. She smiled.
So, this is Talon Alpha.
She glanced at Cabanon and Lucianus.
Who else could it be? Death Spectre iconography? Death Watch issue war gear?
M'lord Omicron would, of course, command Sigma to find me. He would trust no one else. The Ordo Xenos orders you to return with me, Inquisitor, said Karras. You are officially operating beyond your remit. You must return and account for your actions, else be branded a traitor subject to excommunicatus. Epsilon scowled at that word.
Do you think I wanted to put myself in Tau hands? Think, Alpha. Would a loyal Inquisitor reveal Imperial secrets to the Tau on a whim? I am so close now. I alone have come to the Tau, offering a sliver of hope in their fight against the Great Devourer. Their empire may well live or die on the success of our work together, and for that, they will grant me passage to Al-Rashak.
Kara squinted at her. Al-Rashak? It was the first time he had heard the name. In all his reading, he had not come across it. Was it a place, a thing? Why was it so important to this woman that she would deliberately put herself in enemy hands?
I know nothing of that, he boomed. It would not matter if I did. My duty is simple. I have been charged with returning you. Come with me now. Do not let this turn to bloodshed and regret.
You are outnumbered, Death Spectre, laughed Cabanon. 2-1. The man with you will be of no consequence.
You seem to have miscounted, Iron Hand, Karras shot back. Beneath his helm, he was grinning. Isn't that right, Watcher?
Photoreactive camouflage flickered off to reveal Darian Routh, standing just inside the chamber door with his bolter pointed straight at Lucianus.
How fine it is to see in the dark, quoted Routh.
A line from a 34th millennium play by Orkeo.
But so much better to be the dark.
Karras raised his bolter and pointed it straight at Cabanon. To Morant he said,
Go, now, get everyone away from here and do not wait for us. That's an order.
Emperor, watch over you, my lord, breathed Morant. I will see it done.
He ran.
Caw,
said Lucianus, ready to gun the man down before he reached the door.
Let him go, brother, said Cabanon. He matters not. Their game is utterly lost.
What makes you so sure? Karras demanded.
At a sign from Epsilon, the two Death Watch bodyguards began retreating towards the chamber's far door, weapons still trained on Karras and Routh. Epsilon spoke over her shoulder as she walked.
Return to your master, Talon. Ask him to have faith in me and the patience to let this play out. I must see this through, no matter how it looks from the outside.
When she was almost at the door, she paused.
There will come a time, soon, when you will understand all of this. On that day, you will be glad this moment did not descend into bloodshed. Brother should not slay brother, after all. And the prize at the end of this road is great indeed, far greater than you can imagine. It may change everything for mankind. Everything!
Karras walked forward, daring the Inquisitor's bodyguards to shoot.
Answer me this, he called out. Is that the same damned lie you fed the rest of your kill team before you handed them over to be vivisected by the Xenos?
Lucianus took an angry step towards Karras, finger on trigger.
"No, brother,"
barked Cabanon. Reluctantly, Lucianus backed down and retreated to the doorway.
"The death of Saber III was unfortunate," said Cabanon. "But he woke from cryo-sleep before he could be properly restrained. He opted to disobey me and fight. Meni Tsao died before we could restrain him. We almost lost our chance at cooperation. The Tsao demanded his life as a marker of the fresh accord between us. In the end, we had no choice. As she has already told you, ultimately, in retrospect, the Ordo Xenos will understand and approve of her actions."
"Did you see his body?" growled Karras. "Did you see how they defiled it?"
Neither Cabanon nor Lucianus answered. Weapons still leveled, they backed out the door, and then they were gone. Karras and Routh both broke into a run at the same time, determined to chase them down. At that moment there came the double crack of two small explosions in close proximity. Glass shattered. Alien screeching filled the air. Up ahead, between himself and the doorway through which his targets had just vanished, Karras saw a taloned hand grasp for a metal railing. Another reached up, then another. A large, powerful body hauled itself from the holding pen, jaws dripping with noxious saliva. Its violet eyes locked onto Karras. It loosed a chilling scream into the air. Routh's bolter coughed once. The gene stealer's head snapped backwards. It tumbled back into the holding tank. Others spilled up and out, climbing frantically, ravenously. Karras opened fire, bolts ripping into alien bodies and exploding inside, bursting them apart. Every bolt struck its mark, but the stealers were fast, and there were many.
"Like old times," said Karras,
half to himself, as the slaughter intensified. It was something Ghost would probably say. But it wasn't just like old times, because this time his true power was cut off from him. Archiman, the great force sword on his back, was still silent. No call for artful slaughter itched at the edge of Karras's mind. With the Geller field interfering, the relic sword could not communicate with its owner, could not channel his power through the psi resonating crystal matrix in its blade. The Geller field generator was still close enough to be a problem. But there might be enough time. Epsilon wasn't out of range quite yet. Karras and Routh could still turn this around.
"Forward, brother!" Karras yelled. "We break through!"
They ran. A score of slashing talons reached for them, raking their pauldrons as they went. But their bolters continued to bark, and the Tyranids could not stop them. As they passed through the doorway, Routh slapped a demolition charge on the wall and kept running. They emerged into a wide, well-lit loading area. Up ahead, Epsilon, Cabanon, Lucianus, and a cadre of fire warriors were boarding some kind of hovering train carriage. Karras saw a Tau with the marking of a Supreme Commander glance his way, bark orders to the blue-skinned soldiers, and disappear into the passenger carriage.
Cold wave.
There was only one passenger car. All the others were for freight, each loaded with bulky cargo covered by sheets. The fire warriors on the platform formed a firing line and began taking shots at Karras and Routh. Behind the two space marines, determined Tyranids began to spill from the doorway. Routh had been waiting for that. He squeezed the detonator in his left hand. There was a deafening crack and a blast of heat. Tyranid bodies were ripped apart with vicious, pulverizing force. The doorway collapsed along with much of the wall, bringing large chunks of ceiling down with it.
"Satisfying," said Routh, as he turned to concentrate on the Tau. "But we've one less exit."
Karras dropped to an armored knee and began picking off fire warriors with his bolter.
"Never mind. We weren't leaving that way anyway."
The Tau mag train began to hum noisily, rising a meter higher in the air. It moved off, picking up speed quickly, disappearing into a tunnel leading northeast.
"Damn it!"
spat Karras. He and Routh downed the last of the fire warriors. The loading terminal fell silent. Smoke wisped from bolter muzzles and the broken bodies of the Xenos they had slain.
"What now, scholar?" demanded Routh. "Our mission objective just got away."
"We've got more immediate problems," said Karras. "Start running."
He broke into a sprint. At the edge of the platform, he leapt down onto the mag tracks and began racing along them in the same direction Epsilon had gone.
"What do you mean, more immediate problems?"
demanded Routh, as he paced Karras, bolter slung over right pauldron, feet pounding the flat metallic track. Karras felt his power returning to him. At first, just an itch, just a tiny trickle, but quickly more and more, until it was back, with all the force it had ever had. He could feel Archimann again, could sense the sword's soul reconnecting with his.
"Run for all you're worth,"
Karras gasped, as he put on an added burst of speed. He knew what the retreat of the Gela field meant. The Tau could never afford to risk pure strain gene stealers calling out to the Tyranid hive mind. That would draw the High Fleet down on Tychonis. Everything here would die. The removal of the Gela field generator from the tower, while there were still Tyranid life forms present, spoke of Coldwave's intent in plain terms.
"I hope the others get away in time," thought Karras.
At that moment, the ground shuddered so violently that he and Routh were thrown from their feet. Karras landed hard, the speed of his sprint carrying him forward half a dozen meters on his side. He pushed himself to his hands and looked back the way they had come. A bright light appeared, blinding, soundless, all-consuming. Pieces of rock, riding the forward wave of the blast, struck his armor like a hard rain. With all the haste he could manage, he wrenched open his inner gates and called forth the dangerous power of the Immaterium. Routh had risen to his knees just to Karras's right. He faced the racing wall of fire and rock as it bore down on them both.
"Ah,"
he muttered. It was said so calmly.